Hi everyone, my name is Jana and I am a member of the Winnipeg chapter of the Council of Canadians. So one of the numerous bills announced in the legislature this March is Bill 47, the Early Learning and Childcare Act. The bill has raised questions for those working in the childcare sector. So in order for us to get some context and dissect some of the concerns being raised, I did an interview with Jody Kell, the Executive Director of the Manitoba Childcare Association. So the interview will follow. You'll hear some children in the background interjecting at key moments. Those are mine. Listen for that. But it was a great privilege to speak with Jody. She's a really great speaker. So I do hope you enjoy this interview and learn as much as I did.
My name is Jody Kell. I'm the Executive Director of the Manitoba Childcare Association. I have personally been involved in early learning and childcare in Manitoba for, dare I say, 30 years now. And so I really started as a summer student at a childcare program and just fell in love with the work and then decided to go get training to become an early childhood educator too. And really have just worked all these years in various positions, you know, as a childcare assistant, as an ECE, actually I have an ECE3. Then sort of moved into an inclusion type role, moved into supervisory, moved into management. And so have sort of really done all the levels of the tiered of what it means to be a child involved in childcare in Manitoba. I did spend a year out in Kenora, Ontario as well. And so I had a chance to sort of look at that system and be a part of that. And have been at the Manitoba Childcare Association. Actually, I just celebrated my third anniversary on Friday. So it hasn't been that long. My predecessor had been here for 21 years. And so she certainly was the face of MCCA for a very long time. And so I had big shoes to fill in that sense. And so MCCA, we're actually considered the largest provincial organization across Canada representing childcare. So there are associations in other provinces. Probably the closest to our size would be ECEBC over in British Columbia. I think their numbers are still about 1,000, and we currently have just around 4,000 members of MCCA. Our members include childcare assistants, early childhood educators, home-based providers, centers, full-time and part-time, students, and associates. And all members of Manitoba Childcare Association are also affiliate members of the Canadian Childcare Federation, which is our, you know, our national advocacy group. So that's kind of us in a nutshell.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, that gives us a good picture of what you're doing. On your blog, you talk about Manitoba's strong, long-standing childcare system. And you also write about how child caregivers in Manitoba provide care to 30,000 children and their families. So it's a lot of childcare going on. So what would you say are the main strengths of the current system in Manitoba?
You know, I think what has set Manitoba apart from other jurisdictions is a number of things. Number one, it is the regulations that we have in place. So currently, prior to Bill 47 being introduced, what we have is a Community Childcare Standards Act, which has been in place since 1983. Those are the regulations that govern licensed childcare in Manitoba. So it, you know, it governs the curriculum that would be offered. It governs the safety regulations, health, proportion of trained staff, training, all of those things that we know are intrinsic to providing quality childcare. The other thing I think that we have that's unique in our province. So keep in mind, I mean, childcare in Canada, so even though our federal government has made an investment to and has made a promise, an electoral promise to really develop some sort of national system, right now, childcare is a bit of a patchwork across the country. So what it looks like from BC to Prince Edward Island, it's very, very different. Manitoba, as I indicated, we have a strong regulatory system in place. We're primarily a not-for-profit system in Manitoba. And so in Manitoba, of the, say, 1,100 licensed facilities, and that would be home-based providers and facilities, there are, I would say, 95% of our programs in Manitoba are not-for-profit. And so, you know, even though MCCA is neutral on the position statement of auspice, what we do know from evidence is that there's a direct correlation between quality and auspice. You know, I think that during COVID, what we've seen in the long-term care home. You know, there's been a clear indication of the type of care that was provided in the private homes as opposed in the not-for-profit sector. And I'm not trying to paint a brush saying that all not-for-profits are high quality and all for-profits are less quality, but there is some evidence that would suggest that there's higher quality in the not-for-profit sector. You know, there's regulated fees, so that keeps it affordable to families. There's government subsidy available for families. Because there's regulated fees and an operating grant that's given to the not-for-profits, the thought is that the salaries would be higher, so that you can attract and retain a higher level of educated, trained, knowledgeable ECEs, which then, of course, are intrinsic in developing relationships with the children that they work with. And so all those things, I think, are what sort of sets Manitoba apart from other provinces.
You write on your blog that early childhood educators are much more than just babysitters. They have the same needs and priorities as educators in the school system. Just hold on one sec, Lo. Okay, thanks. So I'm interested in the sometimes invisible labor involved in care work. And so what would you say are some of the skills, perhaps some of the invisible ones, required to be an ECE and a care worker? And what working conditions do childcare providers need in order to acquire and maintain these skills and to provide quality care to children? There's a lot there. So,
So we're talking like outside of the actual academic credentials that are required to be an ECE 2 or 3, right?
Yeah, sort of the day-to-day unrecognized skills. I guess I was listening to a blog about care for seniors in long-term care homes and just the kind of conflict management and problem solving and all these kind of skills that we don't maybe necessarily think about when we think of care for seniors. It's like you're dealing with someone who can be quite difficult sometimes, but also, you know, vulnerable, and like, so then you're kind of having to navigate some complicated relationships. So that's kind of what I was thinking about with that question, but feel free to take it where.
I think there's probably a lot of similarities between working with younger children and working with our older generation as well. I mean, I think it takes a really special individual to have that commitment, that care, that dedication, that compassion, that endless commitment to working with young children and their families. You know, as a director, of course, we kind of joke about the fact that we are the HR department, we are the plumber, we are the counselor, we are the manager, we are the ECE, and we kind of wear all these different hats. But I think that, you know, so much time is spent talking about salaries, and I can't not say that the salaries need to be enhanced for facilities, and you know, the funding model just doesn't support what we would say is a market competitive salary guideline for our workforce. But you know, part of it is about that recognition. You know, like I think intrinsically, early childhood educators know that the work they do is important. It's valuable. It has outcomes on a number of levels, both like, you know, from an economic standpoint, but just from children's development. And you know, there's long-term studies that talk about, you know, reduction of poverty from children that have had access to quality licensed childcare programs and had that head start in life. And so there's all those things combined. And, you know, I think it's just that recognition as well that, you know, I often hear from ECEs, it's the, what keeps them at their facility is the environment, right? The people that they work with, the management team, the board of directors that respect and recognize and really value the work that they do. So I think there's just all those embedded things. And so like I said, you know, earlier, I think that there's probably a lot of similarities between working with our youngest generation and working with our older generation as well. Working conditions, benefits, salaries would be very specific to the facility. And so that becomes the challenge, is that in Manitoba, we have what's called a unit funding model. And so the unit funding model's made up of an operating grant and parent fees. And again, when I'm speaking, I'm talking about the not-for-profit programs, because that really is the primarily what it's best to use that in context. And so, you know, knowing that that's the only revenue that comes in for facilities, so they're kind of on an equal playing field in terms of what revenue is coming in, but their expenses can vary. So if I am a facility that's in a strip mall, my rent, my overhead expenses might be extremely high as opposed to your program, which might be in a community school and you pay very little to no rent, let's say. So right there, you have more money to maybe spend towards your staff salaries, towards different benefits, that maybe your program looks a little bit more appealing in terms of a recruitment standpoint. We do have like MCCA in terms of some of the work that we do, like we do sponsor a group a benefits plan for our members. And so if they are MCCA members, they can be a part of the group insurance plan that we sponsor through HealthSource Plus. So again, sort of getting, you know, we advocate for better rates, a more comprehensive plan for our members. We will talk about, I know you mentioned it later on here, about the child care worker retirement benefits regulation as well. And so again, MCCA has a relationship with Industrial Alliance, which oversees some of the simplified money pension purchase plans that is offered to the ECE workforce. But you're right. I mean, you talked about long-term healthcare providers having to work multiple jobs. Totally the same with early childhood educators. We're often hearing, you know, having to need to work one, two extra part-time jobs just to balance their own budgets. And, you know, when is that just too much for them? And when do they get a break to balance their work-life balance? And so it's not ideal, you know, and again, in an ideal world, in a properly publicly funded system, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So MCCA does release annually a market competitive salary guideline scale, which indicates, you know, we've worked with People First HR Services to say, you know, what do similar sectors with similar training requirements, what is market competitive? So, you know, they might be doing a different job, but based on the education, based on the amount of training that they have, what is a fair and reasonable remuneration, right? Unfortunately, it's a great advocacy tool, but we don't have a publicly funded wage grid system here in Manitoba. So your center might be able to say, well, we can pay the 2018 scale. And my center says, well, we can actually pay the 2014 scale. So again, there's that sort of inequitable sort of system.
And I guess like that, so going on that, I saw that the province was seeking feedback on childcare reform a month ago, and that your organization was encouraging parents to send feedback. So based on what you've heard back and your own knowledge of the childcare programs here in the province, what would you say are the most important things our political leaders could do to improve the current system over the long term?
Well, we often say that we use this as an analogy. Childcare kind of looks like a three-legged stool. And so the three legs are affordability, right? So affordable fees for parents, accessibility, are there enough spaces for those who require a childcare space, and then quality. And quality, as I indicated before, is directly linked to the workforce. If any one of those three legs is not funded properly, the stool falls over, right? And this often becomes the challenge, I think, for government, is that they want to appease the public. So they often will try to talk about capacity and, you know, offering more spaces. Oh, we've increased, you know, the system by 1,200 spaces this year. And there's a need for that, right? You know, there used to be, hasn't been updated since 2018, there used to be an online childcare registry that waitlist that tracked how many people were looking for a space. And at the last time it was updated was June of 2018. I think there was over 16,000 on there. Our current government has chosen not to update it. So I'm not sure what, I mean, speculation, again, sometimes we talk about things in like pre-COVID, during COVID, and maybe a post-COVID lens. And so I would say that pre-COVID, I would suspect that 16,000 had gone higher and higher and higher because it just, there's more and more families needing childcare. So the challenge then becomes, if we increase capacity, who's going to work in those spaces, right? So let's go back to quality. And so we don't need just any breathing body working with young children. We need trained, educated, knowledgeable early childhood educators who understand what pedagogical curriculum is to provide a safe, healthy, stimulating environment for children, right? And so it becomes sort of this like hamster wheel of, you know, nobody wants to go into childcare because the salaries aren't very good, but we want to open up spaces because families need them. We want to keep them affordable because families, you know, need affordability. So it's really kind of that, you know, it's a balancing act. And I don't think any government yet has quite figured it out exactly. I think that other countries might have figured it out. If we looked at some of the Nordic countries and Scandinavian countries, they have a much different publicly funded system that really any family that has a young child would have access to it, and it would be very affordable. Now, having said that, Manitoba has long touted the second lowest childcare fees in the country. So, I mean, there's always that's good, that's affordable. But keep in mind, parent fees have been frozen since 2013. So that's 8 years. The Minister of Families announced a couple of weeks ago that their intention was to freeze them for another 3 years. What do you know that stayed frozen in an economy for 11 years? Right? So in the last 21 years, childcare fees in Manitoba have gone up $2. And if you quantify that, that's like, you know, 9 cents a year. I mean, gas goes up more over a Thursday to Friday night, right? I mean, and keeping in mind that childcare programs, 60% of their revenue actually comes from parent fees. So when that fees have been frozen, although it's really great and affordable for families, it really starts to take a toll on a childcare facility's ability to balance their budget. And so, you know, when I look at a latest report that came out from the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, Manitoba is still the second lowest in the country. Third in the country is Prince Edward Island. And they are, 30%, 34% higher than us. So there's probably some room to still even look at affordability that would still allow Manitoba to be quite competitive in terms of, you know, if you're looking at the Greater Toronto Area or different parts of the country whose childcare fees are astronomical, without, you know, really making it too difficult for parents. The balance becomes, if they're going to raise parent fees, then they have to index subsidy levels so that families that require government subsidy to sort of offset that cost can do so. Those levels have not been indexed also since 2013. So what we see is less and less families being eligible for subsidy. And so when governments talk about choices for family, what we really try to advocate for is the choices need to be there for all families, right? Regardless of socioeconomic demographics, all families who require childcare, whether they need it for a part-time space, a full-time space, they need to have access to that space.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I guess I was reading this article about Quebec, and sort of this article was kind of suggesting that while they have focused on accessibility and affordability, they've kind of lost focus on quality, so that they have a very competitive, you know, for parents, it's very accessible, but that there's this kind of, they're not very, the quality isn't always there. So.
Yeah, I think I probably just read the same article. It was Kate Bezin, I think, but they talked about like, what can we learn from the Quebec model, right? Because I think that our federal government has ties to Quebec, of course. And as they move towards this, like this national childcare system that they're talking about in the, you know, fall economic statement, they're talking about in the budget that's gonna be announced soon. And they're often looking to Quebec for what has worked and what still needs to be improved. And so I think it's important to keep our eyes open that Quebec is sort of the poster child for childcare in Manitoba, or sorry, in Canada. But that's not to say that there aren't things that can still be improved in that model as well.
And I don't know if you're okay with this, like this is kind of off my questions, but just talking about quality, I guess, like what would you say makes for like a program that has quality or provides quality, like?
Well, you know, we actually, I mean, I know it off the top of my head, but I'm just right here. I mean, when we talk about quality indicators, there's sort of some like key fundamentals that need to be included. So adequate funding, regulations, we have those here, small group sizes, right? So that's sort of like high adult to child ratio, language rich development, knowledgeable, trained early childhood educators, developmentally appropriate curriculum, and a play-based curriculum, right? That's what sets us apart from the education system. And granted, again, that's where we go back to, there's similarities and there's differences. Young children, they learn best through play. That's what they do. And that's how children understand the world. That's how they explore. That's how they develop. All of their senses is through play. And so when we are trained early childhood educators and we understand what play is and how children learn through play, we can really facilitate that learning in a far different way. And so again, it just goes, all these threads are woven together, right? And so when I'm a well-remunerated, well-educated early childhood educator, I'm going to do the best for every child that I'm taking care of. And that has, you know, again, like not to sound like the beat the dead horse here, but it all trickles down to like the fallout, right? We know there's economic returns. And so if a government, you know, doesn't maybe understand the pedagogical and the developmental benefits, let's just talk about the economic benefits. We know for every dollar invested in childcare, you know, different reports cite different things, but, you know, there's up to a $6 to $7 return on the economy long-term on the benefits of that, right? Going back to what we said before, you know, lower poverty rates, lower crime rates, all these things that are just, they're all woven together. So it's that whole, if we can start investing early, the benefit that will pay off through the continuum far outweigh the initial funding.
So yeah, let's talk about Bill 47. I saw that you guys did an analysis of the bill. Can you speak a bit about what, like some of the major changes the bill is proposing and some of the questions or concerns you might have about these changes?
Absolutely. So keep in mind, so Bill 47, the Early Learning and Child Care Act, as I indicated earlier in the interview, Manitoba has currently, the act is the Community Child Care Standards Act, which was developed in 1983. Are there things within that act that are antiquated? There are. You know, it's been around for 38 years. An enhancement absolutely is probably well to in time. What we've continued to advocate for is that let's not abandon what we have here. So we have this system, we have this act, we have this highly regulated system. If we're going to enhance it and make it better, we're all for that. When we always thought of the act as the starting point, you know, one of the regulations under the act currently is a proportion of trained staff. So for a preschool program, you have 2/3 of your staff trained as an EC2 or 3. That was the starting point, obviously, always. You know, wouldn't we ever want to hope for a system where all the staff were trained in a program? You know, just no different than your children that when they go to school, do they not deserve to have all their teachers trained, educated to give them the best curriculum and academic experience? And so Bill 47, the purpose of Bill 47 was to modernize the act. It was also to sort of streamline it and use more simpler language. If you have done a deep dive of it, I don't know if that goal has necessarily been achieved. So the new act, I think it's like 54 pages or something like that. And so when you compare the Community Child Care Standards Act to Bill 47, it's a bit of an arduous process because things have been moved around too. So it's not a quick read through. It's a laborious sort of process. And it is in a language that is quite legalese. So it's one of those, like, you read it and then you read it again and go, I think this is what they mean. So that's kind of what's led us to, look, we've read it, we've dissected it, we understand the language of the current act, we understand the language of childcare, we have questions now. So what we have identified as, and I'm hesitant to say, I don't want to jump off the deep end, I'm not paid to react always, I'm often paid to respond and to reflect. And so when we have dissected Bill 47, there are sort of 7 things that we specifically identified that we want clarification on. Because when we're reading it, we're perceiving it this way. If we're wrong, if we're perceiving it incorrectly, then I hope someone can explain it to me so I understand it better. So the 7 things that we've identified, they're kind of in no particular order, but the first 3 are probably the most sort of pressing for us. The number 1 is the definition of an early learning program. So right now in Manitoba, licensed childcare includes children as young as 3 months of age up to 12 years of age. Right now in the new Bill 47, they talk about a learning program, which means a program of learning experiences for infants and preschoolers. So there is no mention under that definition, nor throughout the bill, about school-age childcare. And so that has us sort of questioning, will school-age childcare no longer be part of the act? Will it no longer need to be regulated? There are currently 13,000 school-age spaces in Manitoba. And again, going back to one of your very first questions, what sets Manitoba apart from other jurisdictions? One of the things that sets us apart is our school-age component. Many other provinces have before and after programs that are unregulated. And that's not to say they're all horrible, but look what we have here. We have 13,000 licensed regulated spaces for children from 6 to 12 years of age, children who cannot be left alone, children who, yes, they are in school, but they have somewhere to go now in the morning, at lunchtime, after school, 260 days of the year when schools are not running, right? Spring break, winter break, summer break, who's running? Childcare programs are running. So that's one of our questions, is where's school-age childcare in all of this? Second identified question for clarification. In the previous act, it talks about grants being offered to nonprofit corporations and cooperatives which operate licensed care. Question then becomes, are all services now eligible for public funding regardless of auspice? Currently, if you are receiving an operating grant from the province, you're a not-for-profit program, you therefore can only charge a maximum daily rate for families. So for a preschool family, it's $20.80. If you are a private for-profit program, you do not receive an operating grant. However, you can charge a different rate. So I could charge $65 a day. If that same private program is now eligible for an operating grant or some sort of revenue grant from the government, are they still going to be allowed to charge those high parent fees? Because to me, if we're looking for a more equitable system, then we all have to be on the same playing field, right? So if we're all getting operating grants, then we can all only charge that maximum daily rate. So I worry that we're watering down where that funding is going. And I'm not sure if that's the intention, but I would want to know why public funds are going to private operations. That would be one of our questions. Number three, in the new act, it talks about employees who are certified. And they talk about establishing a class of licenses, certificates, and grants. In the previous act, they use the terminology of qualifications and quality. It's embedded through the act. We talk about in the current act about classification. So childcare staff are classified as a childcare assistant, an early childhood educator two, or an early childhood educator three. We currently have 8 colleges that offer ECE training here in Manitoba. A question then becomes, well, what does this mean? Currently, 2/3 of trained staff need to be trained to meet the proportion of trained staff. Will that change that? Is the classification system going to change? Right now, a childcare assistant needs a 40-hour course. An early childhood educator two requires a 2-year diploma. I realize there's a very big gap in between those two things. And maybe there is room for another layer or another rung on the ladder there. What I would caution is that next rung on the ladder doesn't still meet the training requirements of that ECE two. And so if we're talking about proportion of trained staff, I think we have to be clear that only ECE twos and threes are considered trained staff. There's room for other levels, I think, up to that level too. But I think that, again, we're talking about quality. It correlates directly to our workforce. We need to make sure that children deserve, you know, I keep saying this, children and families deserve no less than high quality. Absolutely. I think it devalues parents' expectations to offer them anything else. Number four, one of the things that highlighted, financial assistance can be paid for services provided by a person who is not licensed. So then again, I go back to, does this mean that unregulated childcare is now eligible for public funds? If I can't find childcare for my space and I choose to hire a nanny to watch my children, and that's well within my right as a parent, but would that person then also get financial assistance? Because that does nothing to build a childcare system. You know, I think that families have their choices. If a family has the choice to hire a nanny, absolutely, that would be their choice. But I think that needs to come out of their coffer, not public funds.
Well, and you were talking about like the choices being available to everyone sort of, right? So like—
Absolutely not all families can afford a nanny.
Right, yeah.
Right. Number five. So there's a note somewhere in Bill 47 that talks, it's an explanatory note, it talks about eligible parents may receive financial assistance to obtaining early learning and childcare. I only know what I know now. What I know now is that parents, Siri's talking to me. Sorry, Siri. what I know now is that financial assistance to parents means subsidies, right? So some families who do not qualify or who do qualify for government subsidy might have some of their childcare fees reduced because of government subsidy. So a fully subsidized family only pays $2 a day as opposed to $20.80. And so there's a need for that. If a family is in school and they're not earning a higher income, if they're a low income family, we want them to have that financial assistance. What we want clarification on is what other types of financial assistance are they looking at for families? Tax credits, vouchers, If that's the thinking on that part of the bill, again, that goes back to what I just said a moment ago. That doesn't build a system. Giving families tax credits doesn't really help to build a publicly funded system. And a publicly funded system is what we need to align with our federal government right now. And it's probably, it's our best shot for developing the best type of system in Manitoba. Number six. So this goes back to the question you asked at the end here about the retirement benefits regulation. So right now there is under the Community Child Care Standards Act, it's its own regulation. It's called the Child Care Worker Retirement Benefits Regulation. So again, this is something that sets us apart from other provinces. Manitoba and Quebec are the only two provinces in Canada that offer the workforce some sort of retirement benefit. So in Manitoba, we have what's called a simplified money purchase pension plan. So it's not a defined pension plan, but it's a simplified pension plan where any individual who's working in early learning and child care in Manitoba, if they have been working since 2010, it is actually mandatory for them to join the benefits plan. And so they will put in 4% of their salary towards this simplified money purchase pension plan, and the province of Manitoba actually matches it 4%. It's a spectacular benefit. No other province other than Quebec has something similar to this. The idea of the thought of that being repealed is terrifying, because I think it would be such a regressive policy. So I don't know that it's being, I'm not paid to react. I'm paid to get clarification. So I don't know that it's being repealed. That's one of the questions we have sought from Minister Squires, is what does this mean for the pension plan? We need to be thinking about the workforce for their future to protect them. This again is one of those, going back to, like, again, I sound like a broken record here, going back to that whole attraction and retention. This is one thing that, you know, like teachers, we can offer to our workforce. Number seven. I feel like David Letterman. And number seven on our list tonight. But I don't have 10, I only have seven. The last one is, it's unclear within Bill 47 what the role of board of directors and parent advisory is. So right now, we kind of have a unique governance structure in Manitoba. And I'm not suggesting that it's actually without its flaws. Most licensed not-for-profit facilities are operating under a parent-run board of directors. It's actually part of the regulations. And that comes with challenges, because not every board member who is also a parent at the facility necessarily has the skills to understand how governance of a childcare facility operates, right? And so, we've actually, MCCA has offered a lot of, we developed some resources for online board training so that we can help sort of strengthen that governance piece. And so our question back to the minister is there thought about proposing a new governance structure? Some provinces like Alberta, Ontario have more of a hub model of governance, where there might be one board of directors that oversees a number of facilities. And that might not necessarily be a terrible model. So that's kind of lower on our list of priorities in terms of getting clarification on. Really, if I was going to say, what are my top four? It would be the school age care, it would be the grants, it would be the training of classification, and then, of course, the pension plan. Those are sort of our top four concerns. And that would be what we would want to talk to the standing committee when the bill does go to the committee.
If people out there are interested in if they also have questions and these concerns, kind of signal for them that they want to get involved or something, what can they do to
absolutely help? Yeah, and so it's daunting for us, so I can only imagine how daunting it is for other people. So what we've done, actually just this morning I posted on our social media, and I will get this on our website too. So on our Facebook page, on our Instagram page, I've actually broken down some of these concerns. So it's sort of just in visuals, because sometimes you see all these words on a paper, it's hard to read them and comprehend them. I have a hard time reading my own writing sometimes. But so I've taken some of these concerns and put them into visuals and saying, these are some of the concerns that we're asking for clarification on. If they have questions, they can read through that. They can always send me an email, because I think it's important. I can try to connect to people as best I can. The other thing they can do is we're doing an MLA sort of letter writing campaign right now. So I think I shared the letter with you. Please share it widely. The letter is not calling out our government. The letter is simply saying, please do not abandon the system that we have here. We have worked so hard to develop this regulated quality system. Is it perfect? Not necessarily, but please do not abandon it. Please know that childcare has been here. We'll talk real quickly about COVID. Since the onset of COVID, who has been here? Schools shut down. Everything shut down, right? Gyms shut down, schools shut down, recreation programs shut down. Childcare has stayed open for the last 12 and a half months, in some form or shape. We always talk about childcare as being essential. We've heard that word essential so much over the last year. It would be absolutely remiss not to include early learning and childcare as that, because without childcare, there is no economy. Without childcare, families cannot go to work, they cannot go to school. And so we really have been using this tagline that thanks to childcare, Manitoba works, and it's sort of, a double-sided message that it allows our economy to work, but it allows Manitobans to go to work and to go to school. And so without childcare, we are at a loss. And so I would encourage people to write the letter to their MLAs. MLA writings is really important, because MLAs are throughout the entire province. They are voted in by the people that live in their constituency. So they need to hear from the people that live in their constituency so that they know that their voices must be heard. We're not saying that there isn't room for a reform. We're not saying that there isn't room and flexibility and choices. That those are all important things, but we must protect what we have and not regress our policies that we have in place. And then the last thing that parents, stakeholders, anyone can do is sign up to speak out against the bill, and not even speak out against it. Speak out for childcare. I think that would be a better way of saying it. Register at the clerk's office, 204-945-3636. Anyone from the public can speak out about a bill. A bill goes through a first reading, a second reading, and then it goes to a special committee. It was presented as a second reading last week in the Legislative Assembly. It's still being debated. Once it's finished that debate, it will go to the Special Committee. The Special Committee is made up of members from both sides of the House. It's an opportunity for Manitobans who are citizens in this province to say, this is what works in our province. Please, please, please remember this as we move forward with any reform. So those would be the things I would want anyone to know. Let's remember what we are advocating for. We know what good quality childcare is. Let's continue to try to work with our government to remind them of this and remind them that they have an obligation to do what's right for parents and children in our province.
Yeah. And it benefits everyone, right? Not just parents, because if our kids are being taken care of, that's going to benefit everybody.
Absolutely.
Right?
Well, we're actually, pre-COVID, we were working on these videos. We've developed a couple of them. If you go to our website, you can see them, but they're called Early Childhood Educators Are Essential. One of the ones we were just getting ready to start filming and then move into Code Red, so we had to stop filming, but it's called Thanks to Childcare Manitoba Works. And so what we want to focus on is, different professions. A bus driver, thanks to childcare, I could take my child to childcare this morning, so I was able to take you to your work. Thanks to childcare, the healthcare, the first responder can go to work. Thanks to childcare, the barista at Starbucks can go to work. We all need childcare, whether you personally use it or not, it benefits us all.